Welcome to Entrepreneurs, the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer. We're here live at the PAC event, the Pro Athlete Community event. And I have an extraordinary entrepreneur with me, the founder and CEO of Vestible, the incredible Parker Graham. Welcome to the Playbook.
Thank you, David. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. It's going to be awesome. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there's no real transition in life. I call it expansion. And when I see the course of progress that mostly athletes make in business, I identify skills that they have, knowledge that they've gained, and utilizing that desire that it took to be a great athlete.
Yeah.
Because every great athlete has to have a desire that they must be what they can be, or there's no way they'll make it. For you, you have a great financial background. And with that comes skills that a lot of athletes don't develop. In fact, I think it's one of the atrocities of playing sports is that we don't learn the basics. I mean, it's bad enough in America. Most kids don't learn the basics anyway.
Yep.
But athletes are impeded against those basics. And then they're forced in a situation where they have so much money. And that's why history and human nature has created the deficit and the losses that have occurred.
Absolutely.
In all levels of athletes. And I speak that with humility because I lost everything over $100 million. So for you, at what age did you start to figure, not I'm going to do business, but just developing different skills that may have enhanced your athletic ability, but also secured different options and opportunities for the future?
Oh, that's such a loaded question, David. I had a single mother, which is definitely a huge component of it. Honestly, athletics wasn't really an option for me for a long time. I always thought, and I was always told, you know, you're going to go to college. And I didn't really become...
Sounds like a single mom.
Absolutely. And she was working two jobs and put herself through college age for me from like 5 to 12. So that was really the first step in what I would say, like somebody who's not relying on anyone else to do what they want to do, right? Just really having true grit and creating the life that they want. And so she literally pulled us out of poverty by her own bootstraps. And so when that's your like first person, your first hero, right, around you, everything else becomes a game where you want to make that person proud. And so when academics were her biggest thing, that's what I wanted to excel in. And luckily for me, I was always a big kid, so I was always bigger than everybody else. But academics was going to be number one for me. And then I got good at sports. So it was really a blessing that kind of God gave me the gifts that he gave me. And that I had a mom who really just instilled in me from day one, like sports are sports, but you need to have the background and the ability to succeed outside of it.
You know, we had similar backgrounds, except for I grew up with a single mom and six kids.
There you go.
Two jobs, second grade teacher, packed our dinner in a paper bag, drove us around filling up turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards. Education was all that mattered to her.
Yep.
Fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. Every day I heard doctor, lawyer, or failure.
That's great.
The only difference in our journey was I never got to be the biggest guy or athletically talented, which, you know, resulted in being a below average college football player, but still a great journey. One of the things about having a single mom is it's not necessarily the advice that single moms give us. It's the impact of watching them.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to tell my mom before she passed, I'm like, I don't think I really ever listened to you, but mom, I just want to tell you how grateful I am that I got to watch you all these years. When you were watching your mom, education became really important, but there's lessons of discipline, determination, consistency. What were some of the things that she was doing that you remember when you were little going, God, mom does everything?
I'm telling you right now, when people talk about how hard their day is today, it's like, you have no idea what hard is. You know, and as an entrepreneur, every day is really hard, right? Like, but I still have this memory of my mom literally coming home from a job, going into like taking care of everything that I needed, my brother, my sister needed, all that stuff. And then we're going to bed and she's staying up and charting stuff for her nursing degree and doing all the education side of what she was trying to build at night. Goes to bed, wakes up before all of us, gets us ready to go to school, and she's going to work. And how she did that, I have no idea how she was able to do that, feed us, clothe us, and again, pull us up out of poverty by her own just will. That right there, it's kind of what you said, right? It's not telling me what to do. It's showing me what to do. I will forever be grateful because no bad day that I have will be as hard as the hardships that she experienced to get me to where I am today. So I kind of feel like I'm kind of living on someone else's wings, right? Like she did all this work to provide the ability for me to be where I am today, not just in athletics, but just in life in general. Makes life a lot easier.
And her greatest joy is your success.
Oh, absolutely.
By far. And just telling her every day you're happy, you're healthy, you love and appreciate her, I'm sure it means everything. Now, getting involved in fintech.
Yep.
At the time you got involved in fintech.
Crazy, right?
Provided even more options and opportunities for you. Where did that passion come from beyond just education? It takes a certain type of mind to be a financial guy and to get into the financial services planning and fintech space.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting story. So when I got done playing ball, I got directly into wealth management and I was obsessed with it. I loved it. I was doing a lot of our research and analytics on what investments we should make, what we should be doing, because all of my older advisors that I was working for, they were doing the golf and the dinners and all that. And they were doing the sales stuff, and I was doing all the research. And I just kept running into all these amazing companies that were founded by young people my age. And I also quickly realized that all of my clients that I was working for were all business owners. They weren't employees. And it was a really big just aha moment of, okay, for me to have really creating generational wealth in my family, it wasn't going to be through athletics, but the only way to really do that in the real world is to do that by owning a business. And I was in finance. I loved it. I had led a lot of investments into tech companies. And I found a really niche business to go build. It was a banking technology company. So it wasn't like I picked fintech. It just so happened that that was the environment that I was in. And I think the other side of that coin is I had the gumption and the courage to leave that really nice paying job with a nice car and all that and go be poor again, honestly. I went through a divorce at that time. So a lot of stuff was happening in that kind of rebirth of who I was. It really wasn't necessarily like fintech was the goal. Fintech was more so the conduit to really bring to life what I feel like I was called to build, if that makes sense.
And you built a platform, a Vestible, that helps people and provides them with financial opportunity.
Yep.
Give me a little bit of background on that niche when, a lot of people, opportunity exists everywhere. And one of the things that I help develop with entrepreneurs is ability to see the opportunity, to align skills, knowledge, and desire with what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think is doing well.
Yep.
It seems to me that as you were doing your research, you saw how your capabilities were aligned with what was doing well, what was stable, and what you thought was going to be doing well.
Exactly. I thought, when you look at sports ownership in general, it's really owned by two people, private equity and really wealthy people.
Yeah.
And you mentioned kind of giving people new opportunities. I didn't really think that that was right. Most folks who are fans of sports or most folks who enjoy sports aren't the billionaires. They're not from a population density perspective. And so I wanted to create a way where sports ownership could be available to anyone, not just those people, and create an infrastructure where you could do that here in the States with as simple as like what you use with Robinhood. You want to go invest in Apple, Google, and Facebook? You go to Robinhood, you open an account, and you invest. That's exactly what I built with Vestible. That's what the intention was. And we're having a lot of fun right now. It's been cool.
Yeah, no, I've been on the minority ownership side of the big three, and Vestible certainly makes it much easier.
Yes.
And you don't have to. And that democratization has a really nice feeling for it. I have a show on Cheddar called Go Fund Yourself. It's a Reg CF show.
Yep.
Up to $5 million. Yep. And we change people's lives $100 at a time.
Yes.
By giving and amplifying a message or making aware to like some really killer opportunities. A lot of people don't know what the Jobs Act has done. They don't know the democratized way of providing these type of things. When I look at Vestible, I think one of the challenges that it would have is just awareness.
Yes.
And because we can only spend so much money to make people aware. What are some of the bigger challenges today for any small company to elevate the awareness? Because they're just one step away from being extremely successful.
I can tell you probably five, but I think the two biggest ones are probably a double-edged sword, which is AI. AI is such a hugely beneficial tool for small businesses to accelerate. But what it's done is it's also created a lot of noise, right? A lot of headwinds to getting awareness done because so many people are using it. It's creating what's called like AI slop now, right? So it's a benefit, but also a con. And then the second one is really just around attention. Just people now, they can have their attention grasped from any walk of life, from any kind of thing that they're interacting with. It's so hard to break through that noise. Think about what most folks do when they get done with their job at night. They go home to see their family. They turn on Netflix or HBO Max or whatever, and then they're done for the night. Maybe they're scrolling. So as a small business, how do you interrupt their pattern? How do you interrupt their day to bring that value add real quick and then get a new customer? It's so difficult. But I think to your point that if you can figure out whatever your individual secret sauce is to do that, the value and the loyalty you can create is extremely, extremely beneficial. I don't know about you, but loyalty right now is more valuable than it's ever been because people will continue to double and triple down on what you're doing if they believe in the mission of what you're trying to provide.
Yeah. And we're here at the pro athlete community. And I stress as an advisor, the idea of community,
yep.
Building my own brand on community. Not worrying about any product, services, or solution, not selling off of stages.
Yeah.
Podcast is no advertising, sponsorship. I have and have still the belief that community provides the greatest opportunities.
Absolutely.
And in that measure, though, in building that community, a lot of people ignore some of what I believe is secret sauce. One of them's in person.
Oh, yeah.
You're here in person.
Oh, yeah.
And when you talk about disruption, we can do so much more today because that's what builds the community and loyalty is meeting you in person means
yes,
a lot more because I've seen you. But now we're going to have a relationship
yep.
because we sat for half an hour in person. What value do you give to being here in person and doing other things in person?
I always equate it to, you know, who do you as a person love to spend your time with, right? Is it a person you barely know? Is it a person you've never met? Or is it a person that you've met and have built a relationship with? It's that person, right? And so from a small business perspective, if I put that hat on, the more you can go meet your customer, spend time with your customer, spend time with your network and your community, the more opportunities are going to come your way just naturally because people will like you, they'll want to help you, and they'll want to see you be successful. Because I think innately human nature, like we all want people to be happy. I think that I have a very optimistic view of the world, right?
I'm with you, man. That's my whole mission,
right? It's like, I feel like people want you to be happy and successful. And all you have to do is just raise your hand and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm building. And don't be afraid. And you'd be surprised as to when you do that in person, you have those conversations, what doors will open for you. I'm a big believer in be present, create serendipity. You can only create serendipity if you're willing to step into that uncomfortable zone of putting yourself out there.
I try to create a mathematical equation. What I pay attention to and what I give intention to, I'm chairman of Napoleon Hill, so
yep.
maybe a little Napoleon Hill-esque, but attention plus intention equals coincidence.
That's a great line.
Is truly the coinciding of the universe.
Yep.
Another area that I'm very successful in that I think a lot of younger people, especially entrepreneurs, ignore is email.
Interesting. Okay.
Just like the in-person interactions we have disrupt the noise of AI,
yes,
social,
yes,
the unbelievable quantity of content, people still check their email.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to be able to take in opt-in emails is getting less and less expensive. Not buying lists, but
yes.
I'm talking, hey, you want a free overlap agreement? You want a free book? Email me, david@dmeltzer.com.
Yep.
We're taking in, you know, 30,000 opt-in emails a week.
That's amazing.
And that has propelled our community more than the million followers I have on TikTok.
That's amazing.
And it's a lot harder to get a million followers today on TikTok than it was a year ago
yeah.
or 3 years ago. So for you, why do you think so many people are ignoring email? Because you seemed a little bit surprised even when I said email.
So I will tell you that for us in our business, we have about an 18,000 person newsletter, which we've
yeah.
crafted over years,
phenomenal.
Which is amazing. And that's our community, right? I think to answer your question, I think people don't want to do hard things. And I think figuring out the formula of how to get people to open your email and getting really good at cold email and understanding, like, not that it's all formulaic, but just understanding
yeah.
how to get people to open the email, the subject line, what to say, how to not be too salesy, and how to really try to foster a connection point via email is not easy. And I think people just sometimes just don't want to do the hard work. And sometimes other stuff's easier, right? Doing
yeah.
a viral TikTok trend is much easier than putting the work in to build that real community relationship.
Yeah. And to add to that thought too, I think one, it's sometimes the simple things to do
yeah.
are simple not to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you'll fill your time with whatever.
Yeah, I'm teaching people to double down on simple things. Like for me, it drives me nuts. Like just saying thank you. Like my kids probably are extremely frustrated with me because I'm like, saying thank you changes everybody's life.
Yeah.
It's free and it takes 0.1 seconds.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that's simpler to change your life than saying thank you. But once again, the simple things to do are simple not to do. And then I think there's another component of email because, you know, we're more in the millions on our database. It still hurts my feelings when I see stop.
Or really?
Unsubscribes me.
Yeah, yeah.
It won't hurt my feelings on social when someone calls me an idiot or I stole gratitude from Gary V.
That beats the algorithm though, right? So it's good if they say that.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I still feel rejected when you get the stop, unsubscribe. Yeah. And I get all my emails directly to me.
I love that. That's great.
So I thought there was an emotional side to it. Let's get into the value proposition of Vestible. So here we have a democratization to be able to be a minority owner in all types of different sports teams.
Yep.
And those values keep going up and up and up. It's probably more consistent than even in real estate in America.
It's outperformed the
S&P.
It's outperformed the S&P for the last, 20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I actually am looking at being SMA in a baseball team now.
I love that.
Moving.
That's
great. You probably know the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a whole nother game, right?
It is. That's a whole nother
$25 level. $25 million over 5 years. It's no joke.
Yep.
A $1.8 billion deal.
Yep.
Give me an idea of kind of how people participate, what the size of the deals are, just specifically, a USL team, for example, or a minor league baseball team.
Yeah, really what we're looking at and where we see as the best opportunity right now is the middle market in Europe. So European soccer.
Yeah.
Right now, most of the private equity firms and high net worth individuals, they're so focused on the Championship League and EPL. Those are where most of the money, and the Liga to an extent. And it's left this gaping hole for really well-run clubs who are really effective and look great on a P&L and a balance sheet. And they're just in different geos, just in different locations.
It reminds me of minor league baseball 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I mean, to an extent, minor league teams are sort of well followed. Some of these clubs, it's the lifeblood of the community.
Whole community.
Yes. And so to answer your question, it's like really we're looking at that as a thesis today.
Yeah.
We have all kinds of opportunities we're turning away right now because we want to focus on one thing and do it really, really well. But our clubs are going to range between our first club is a $3 million deal. It's a 30% minority stake. Our next club is a 100% full takeover. So we're going to be doing majority positions as well. And that's a $22 million deal.
And what's the minimum investment?
So the best part about being a democratized platform is that there is no minimum, right? You got to be able to afford one share. That's the minimum. But we do have tiers based on how much you do invest with us over time or per deal. So we have a lot of cultural experiences we do. So if you're an owner in one of our clubs and at a certain point or at a certain investment level, you're going to actually be flown to the club to do a full immersion trip. We really believe in this hospitality, experiential component of ownership. Sports ownership is not being serviced today. And we're providing that on the platform along with these club investment opportunities.
That's super exciting. And within the context of that, you're building a community with three things: experience, business development, and post-production content.
Yes, sir.
So there's three different values that go beyond a good investment.
Yes, sir.
Which it really is. Now, because it's democratized as well, it's much more liquid than, let's say, my deal.
Correct. So we have actually...
I'm locked in, for a month.
And we really like that aspect of it because the term that you're going to have on your deal is probably a 7 to 10 year lockup, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere you'll have some liquidity opportunities, right? But on day one on our platform, there's a secondary market attached to it immediately. So the moment you buy your shares, you could technically flip them if you wanted to. So we have that secondary liquidity access. And then in addition to that, these deals and opportunities are just things that private equity just really won't look at because the deal terms are just not in their favor for their fund returns. So it's access for you as the investor, but then it's also access for the teams to get the capital that they need to be in the best of their ability, winning championships and such.
That's super fun. Now,
thanks.
A lot of people don't understand the Jobs Act. They don't understand accredited or unaccredited. So these are opportunities for people. They don't have to sign NDAs.
Correct.
They don't have to be accredited.
Correct.
Doesn't matter how much money you've made or what you own or how much assets you have.
Correct.
And so it's completely America at its core.
That's right.
And which is even funner, in my opinion, more fun because we're investing in teams in Europe.
That's right. Yeah.
In their passing.
Yes.
And
exactly.
So we're also uniting the world in that respect as well. as you get full ownership of teams, yep. there becomes other opportunities. As you mentioned, beyond the experience, now you own a team, you have to facilitate the management.
Yes, sir.
And some different choices, which I've been involved in front office opportunities. So what are your plans as far as, you know, taking over the front office and operations?
So we have to find great partners. And I'm a, you know, being a former pro football player, the team is the most important part, right? You can have great individual accomplishments from different players, but if you don't have a cohesive unit, cohesive team, it doesn't matter. And so along the way, we've been meeting and cultivating these relationships, going back to your community note, right? Yeah. To where we actually have people that want to lead that effort for us, who have not only done it at, you know, a smaller level, but have done it at the highest level in English football specifically. And we're really proud of that. These people are buying into our vision. They believe what we're building. And, you know, we got to go prove it. That's the other side of it, right? Like, we have all these theses and think we can pull it off, but actually putting it to work and getting out there and putting ourselves out there, it'll be fun to watch and see what happens.
Well, I think it's also fun that, you know, as you get bigger and there's more aspects in operations yes. and management, that everybody owns a piece of the team.
Yep.
So, you know, your general manager is going to have an investment himself at whatever level he feels comfortable in doing yeah. it, which, you know, as we've seen with the Green Bay Packers, makes a real difference when the yeah. community owns the team.
Yes.
How much participation are you getting from the local team community yep. compared to the America?
Yeah, so I think the investments are just different in Europe from a retail. Like, we're just talking about the retail market specifically. Yeah. Folks don't just have capital in a 401k or in an IRA the way that they do here in the States. So it's very, very different. So we're going to see some participation. I would honestly tell you that I think the majority of participation is going to be U.S.-based investors because we have extra cash, even though
right.
feel what you want about our economy and all that fun stuff. So what's happening right now, oil's at $100 a barrel. people still love sports in a way here from a monetary perspective. That's just not quite the same there. I will say this, though. There is a lot of fan ownership models that are in Europe that are not here. A lot of teams, the Socios model, I don't know if you're familiar with that yeah. in Spain. The German 50+1 is another model. So it's much more normalized there, which is really cool. And they're going to have access to it. But I honestly, I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to find out on IPO day. But I think you're going to see a lot more US-based than European-based, if that makes sense.
And when is IPO day?
April 15th.
Coming up soon to be
coming
now.
Coming up soon.
Let's talk through the process. So I definitely want to invest.
Yep.
So talk me through.
I'll get a piece of paper right here on the side of the stage.
Yeah, let's do it. Yep. Very good. So how do you get set up?
Yeah, so basically on the app right now, it's in the app stores. You can go download the app, open an account right now.
Vestibule's the name of the app.
Vestibule's the name of the app. It's in both app stores. Open an account. It's a brokerage account. It's protected fully like you would in Robinhood, except you're investing in sports teams versus the tech stocks. And right now you can join the wait list. So the wait list is currently open, for KSV, which is the team, KSV 1919. And then again, that'll be turned on IPO day, April 15th. And then from there, as long as it takes us to raise the capital, that'll remain open. And once it's closed,
that's a $1 million raise.
It's a 3.45 million.
Oh, so 3.5 million.
Yeah. So 4 million, or 3 million
euro. On $10 million val.
Yeah. So it's a 3 million euro investment.
Yeah.
On a 10 million euro valuation.
Okay. Figured. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And through that account, you just fund it through your whatever
bank account. You tie your bank account to it.
Can
money
you fund
comes
crypto
over.
In there?
Not today. No,
not today. Okay.
No, not today. So we are very heavily regulated. We're just dealing with banks right now. There is some talk about doing some stable coins in the future or some crypto. We're just not there yet. I believe in this vision that we have to build the sports stock market in its entirety. To crawl, walk, run to that, right? We're just crawling right now and getting our first deal out the door.
Yeah, I can see it evolving.
Yep.
Now, how many people do you have involved beyond you?
How many people do we have on the team?
Yeah.
Let's see here. I think we just hired an intern, so if we want to count them, it's like 8.5, I think is what you counted at, right?
Right on.
We're a very lean team. I will tell you, AI...
It's a lot easier to be lean, right?
It really is. I mean, it's so easy. And we have absolutely A players across the board. And that's probably the most... you've hired people. Like, it's the most important part, especially in a startup. Having a B player sticks out like a sore thumb when you have A players surrounding them, right? And it's almost, they kind of self-select themselves out, if that makes sense, after time. Because
I call it managing it out.
Yes, players will wear out a B player in 5 seconds. And so people will either rise to the occasion or not. And I'm very thankful that our team is grinding the way that they are. And I think right now we definitely need to hire some more people, but it's that business owner mindset of we got to be as lean as possible until it's time for us to keep growing.
Well, for me, it hits all the right points. One, you know, understanding the sports market and where it's gone historically. Two, the leadership that's there. And then three, the growth potential. So, you know, for me, and I knew a little bit about it. I always use the playbook to learn the playbook of success. And what a great business opportunity for everyone. Go download Vestibles, sign up for the wait list, wait for the IPO on April 15th. Whatever your timing and risk tolerance is, whatever you feel comfortable with, you have an opportunity to be a minority owner in KSV 19.
1919.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yes, sir. 100-year-old club. 1919 was the opening
Over 100 years. Yes, that's right. Awesome. And where is KSV at?
They're in Kapfenberg. So right in between Vienna and Graz.
Nice.
And it's a beautiful part of the country. It sits in a valley. It's a blue collar town. It's a really fascinating spot. It's blue collar. People are hardworking. It reminds me so much of the Midwest America, which is where I'm from. And these people just love their club. And the club has been top tier before. They've been relegated. And really all we need right now is a capital injection to get them back to top tier and then figure out how to exit. That's the
and
goal.
And the secondary market will allow everybody to exit, That's which right. is a huge advantage over the dumb things that I do. anyway, Parker Graham, CEO and founder of Vestibles. Go download Vestibles. Learn about how we're democratizing ownership in sports. Someday you may actually own one of the big three teams utilizing Vestibles, or maybe just having a sports stock market in itself worldwide. Parker Graham, a visionary, bringing the skills, the knowledge, and the desire to sports. Most importantly, making his mom proud, which resonates with me. Parker Graham, thanks for joining me.
Dave, thank you so much. It's been great.
You're amazing. Everybody remember, be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self. And do good deeds. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.